ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। सो आफ्टर् द फस्ट् इनिशियल् मन्त्रा ॐ पूर्णमद वेर् पूर्णं वास् एक्स्प्लेन्ड्, Shruti starts her discourse in Mantra 1, which gave us the standpoint from knowledge. So, Isha Vasya Sarvam Idam. So, this Isha has enveloped this entire world. And from Bhakti, you can take it as God has enveloped the entire world. Or you can also take it as Vishishta Advaita. We are a part of God. In any case, whichever standpoint suits you, you can take it. So Shruti says there is no point coveting others' wealth. When you see the oneness, then it's not just one, greediness to be avoided, but all the negative qualities to be avoided. Then those who are not mature enough to have this vision that, you know, Isha is pervading all through the world, through the universe, Shruti gives a method of action, the path of action. So she says that she understands that every one of us has this tendency to live. And I told you, it's a natural tendency because in a sense, we are that existence, consciousness, bliss. Being existence, we want to exist forever. That is the principle, because we are existence. Being of the nature of consciousness or knowledge, we have the curiosity to know things. And some of it is really good because that's how so many inventions and discoveries have happened. That's how we landed on the moon. Like we knew, we wanted to know what is on the moon. So good things are also happened. It's used for bad things also, gossiping, what is the neighbor doing, etc. But as spiritual seekers, that is what we need to understand, that yeah, a healthy curiosity to know things is good, but we really don't want to be getting into things which are not our business. And because we are of the nature of Ananda, we always want to be happy and we'll always try to get rid of sorrow. So Shruti, recognizing that, says, okay, you want to live to be 100 years, you can, but then you must perform karma in a particular way, because that is the only way that will purify your mind. And then you will be eligible for Mantra 1, to understand Mantra 1. So that is the vision that she gives us in this second mantra. Na karma lipyate nare. When karmas are done with the attitude of karma yoga, the whole chapter 3 is based on this verse, then that karma is not going to bind you, because karma by nature binds. And what binds us is not the physical karma, but the attitude behind that action. So when the attitude is of doership and of enjoyership, which means I am doing the action and I will enjoy the results, then that is ego. And the ego gives the karma a locus to stick onto. I said, something has to be there. And that locus is provided by the ego. If we do not provide it, the ego, there is nowhere for that karma to stick. And this is the secret of Bhagwan himself saying, Bhagwan Shri Krishna in chapter 4, no karma ever taints me because I have no doership and I have no enjoyership. So there's no way karma can touch me. So if we also want to be like that, then that is the attitude with which all action should be done. And then Shruti in Mantra 3 says, what happens to those who cannot follow Mantra 1? They don't have the vision of the knowledge. Okay, they don't even want to do karma action. Then they go to Asurya Namatelu. They go to these sunless worlds. Sunless worlds means to be understood not as a physical world somewhere. They will be born in this world only, but there will be the darkness of ignorance, which will be carried. So obviously, because, see, if I can't do knowledge, then Shruti is telling me to do karma. So every one of us, we can do karma. We cannot say that I cannot do action either, you know. We can. But if somebody is not even willing to follow, but that action has to be done with a particular attitude. If somebody is not even willing to follow that attitude, then what can Shruti do? So she says, then you will always have the darkness of ignorance and you will carry it with you from birth to birth. Just like if I have a headache, whether I go into this room or that room, that headache is going to go with me because it is with me, the headache. Same way this ignorance is with me. So if I die with that ignorance, where is it going to go? So again, going to come back. So that's what she means here. And they are as if committing suicide. Means what? Means they're wasting their life. Suicide means not a physical, they're not coming, they are living happily and they want to live long also because their natural tendency is also existence, consciousness, bliss. It's not like they are coming from somewhere. They're coming from the same. But then they don't have this idea of liberation. They don't have this idea of oneness with the universe, etc. So they are ignorant, then they have wasted their life. This committing suicide after death, it's yeke chatmahano janaha. It's like they are killing themselves, means wasting their life. If the life is wasted, it's almost like killing yourself, right? So that is what is meant here, not a physical suicide in that doja. Then the next mantra, the next two mantras actually, and we were on the fourth and fifth. The goal is explained. What is this supreme reality is what Shruti is explaining. And she says, aneja dekam manaso javyo. So it is ajam and it is moving as well as not moving. And I explained to you, with respect to the supreme reality, it is not moving. With respect to space, the space is not moving. If I go stand on the sun, then the sun is not rising or setting or moving. But from the standpoint of the upadhi, so from the standpoint of this body, then consciousness appears to be moving. Okay, so there are two different standpoints. Always there will be two different standpoints. Because one is from the level of the upadhi. One is from standing on earth, I see the sun rising and I also see it setting. But then there is another standpoint. If I am able to go on the sun, I will know that the sun has never moved. Space. Yes, when I move, like space within me moves. If I go from one room to another, or one destination to another, space within me has moved. Yes, but the space outside of me, the total space has not moved. So that is what she means. Where she says that it moves, yet it moves not. And then maniso javiyo, the mind cannot reach it because it is because of which the mind is functioning. So the mind cannot go to its source. Just like the flashlight cannot look at its own battery cells. The flashlight will illumine the entire room, but it cannot look at its source. So that's why it says no. Then the devas kudu, nainan deva, devata. I told you devata is that which illumines. And there are dyotana deva. So first is satchit ananda, that existence, bliss itself is devata. But that is not the meaning here because Shruti cannot say that, you know, pure consciousness cannot reach itself. So that is not the meaning. The other meaning is the deities like Indra, etc. The other meaning is the phenomenal forces. Then the mind also illumines and the senses also illumine. So already she has talked about the mind. Mind cannot reach it. So therefore the devatas now mean in this second line, mean the sense organs. So by the senses, you cannot reach it. This is what is meant. None of the senses can go. Because also I told you technically, see six means of knowledge that I told you, starting from direct perception. All the others are based on direct perception. Like I directly see smoke, so I can infer fire. I see the wet road in the morning, so I infer rain. So all those are based on direct perception. And Shruti is here is saying that you cannot perceive it by your senses. So when the direct perception itself is negated, all other means of knowledge also get negated automatically. Because if there is no direct perception, inference cannot happen. Presumption cannot happen. Absence cannot happen. I have to physically see that somebody is not here, then I have the knowledge that that person is not. So if that direct perception is not happening, all others are automatically getting negated. Okay, so that's what she says. And then it goes faster than those who run after it. Because I gave you the example of a plane. A plane goes from destination A to destination, which space is already there. So what it means is, even if you, wherever you go, wherever you see, it is already present. And that is what is meant. It goes faster than the one who runs after it. Okay, that is what is. And then Matarishwa, Tasmin Apo Matarishwa Dadati. So I told you one interpretation is this, the air is supporting water because air, water is H2O. Hydrogen, two molecules of hydrogen and oxygen, that is air. But where can, who is supporting air is space. Because without space, air cannot exist. And then who is supporting space is the supreme reality. So that is one meaning of it, that it is supporting. Matarishwa also, you can take it as the total pranas, which is Hiranyagarbha. So it means Ishwara. But then the support, apa, the word apa is the word, tasmin apo, apa, apa becomes the karmas. So Ishwara is the karma phala data, and the way he supports it is by giving results. Because we do karma and then it is support, because it is creating more desires in our mind and more karmas. And this is leading us to future births. And that is the support that is meant by that. So means it is supporting, means it is enabling. Support here means it is enabling. So Ishwara being the karma phala data, and I told you it is not a random karma phala data that I like so and so, so I'll give a good. No, the karma phala, the result of action is based on what I have done in my past life plus what I have done in my this life. Both count. The unknown factor is what I've done in the past life, and that is why we cannot say that, oh, I studied so hard, how come I didn't pass? Yeah, this time you studied very hard, but we don't know what you have done in the past. So this karma phala data must be understood correctly. Ishwara is not unfair. He cannot help it. You have done this type of karma. So this type of experience is warranted. It could be a happy experience or it could be a sad experience. And while experiencing that experience, I either like it or I dislike it. And that's how I create more vasanas for myself. That is how I create another birth for myself. And that is how Ishwara is supporting all this karmas and then karma phalas and then births and rebirths. Okay. And we say Ishwara because we cannot say pure consciousness. Pure consciousness does not do anything. In the presence of pure consciousness alone, Ishwara functions. So Ishwara himself is supported by pure consciousness. So ultimately everything is supported by pure consciousness. Now I had completed up to here and I had said that why is Shruti talking in such contradictory terms? What is the reason? So there is one thing about words. Say, if I say, bring me a glass of water or bring me a pen or bring me a phone or a computer, the other person will immediately understand, okay, what I'm saying. But if I say, bring more, now what will happen? Now what that other person, what is she asking of? More of what? More of pens, more of water, more of computer, more of, or is she even talking English? More, you know, if we go, if somebody Marathi, is she asking for a peacock? More means peacock in Marathi. I'm told more in Tamil means buttermilk. So if somebody is a Tamilian, they might think, is she asking for buttermilk? Or what is she asking for? So the thing is that when I say something like bring more, they cannot form a concept. The one who is listening to this cannot, if I say bring me a watch, bring me water, bring me, there is a conceptualization in the mind of what I want and it can be brought. So the point is that anything which is finite can be defined and it is immediately understood. I can say, give me hot water, give me cold water, give me ice water, whatever. It is finite. It can be defined. But We are talking of infinity. And when I say bring more, it cannot be defined. There is no definition for it. And that's why Shruti does not want us to form any kind of idea regarding this pure consciousness, the supreme reality. Because the minute we form any kind of concept in our intellect, we have objectified the reality. And it is not an object of perception. And that is the first thing that we must understand, that we cannot objectify the reality. We can objectify the form, but that's why we say form is false. So I have an idol of Krishna, or I have an, Shivlinga or Shaligram or whatever, that is an object. But from the highest standpoint, that form is false. And Shruti Upanishads, because they are talking from the highest standpoint, they don't want us to form any kind of concept, because concept, conceptualization is objectification. And we cannot objectify the supreme reality because it is the final subject. It has to be understood. It has to be realized as my own self, as the final seer. Okay? That is the reason. It's not just this Upanishad. Every Upanishad, Shruti will describe the reality in such contradictory term. Later on, it's even more. It's smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest and all those, farther than the farthest. Now it's coming. Next one. So this is what it is. All right. Now the next mantra also describes the supreme reality. Tade jati tanne jati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasyasya bahyataha. The Atman moves and it moves not. I told you, it's always contradictory, she will talk. It is far and it is near. It is within all this and it is also outside all this. So moves and moves not is the same idea being carried from previously. So when I say it moves, with respect to the upadhi, it has moved. Or I've given you the example last time also. If I'm sitting in the car and I'm going from one destination to the next, I totally have not moved. If somebody asks me, did you move? No, I was just sitting in the driver's seat. But the car has moved, so I have moved. So from the standpoint of me, myself, I have not moved. There has not been any movement. I was just sitting in the driver's seat. But from the standpoint of the car, yes, I have moved. Because ultimately, I am at my destination. I've gone somewhere else in the car. So that is what this means. Ajati and Naijati. So it moves and yet it moves not. It is far and it is near. Now here, when I told you about these pramanas, Shabda Pramana, I don't know whether did I tell you that there is a direct meaning towards, and I don't think I said, okay. So what happens with the problem with words? See, we saw the six different means of knowledge. And the last one was Shabda Pramana. Words, and we said that the supreme reality can only be known through words, right? And with words, the problem though is, and I think one problem I explained to you was that it can have a word can have multiple meanings. I think I explained that, right? If I say table, you could have a question, is she referring to a writing table or is she referring to a mathematical table? Okay, so that problem is there with words. So the point is that with what intention Shruti is using a particular word has to be clearly understood. And that's why we need those commentaries by Bhagavan Shankaracharya, who in his commentary, we will dissect every word and he will give us the various meanings of that word. And then because it is the responsibility of the commentator, not that Bhagavan, I mean, he has done it. When a person writes a commentary on an Upanishad, there are certain responsibilities that that person has. One of the responsibilities is that every single word has to be explained. This word has just been used. It has no meaning. That also has to be told. And then the word has to be broken into its etymological meaning. So a verbal root has to be given. And that verbal root can have more than one meaning. So how many ever meanings that verbal root has, the commentator has to explain all those meanings, and then he has to explain also why he's taking only meaning number one and not taking meaning number two and three. That is why words become difficult. That is why it is always said that doesn't matter even if you're a scholar in Sanskrit, just reading on your own is not going to help. So the other problem with Shabda is there is a direct meaning to a word and an indirect meaning to a word. A word can have a direct meaning and a word can have indirect meaning. And the example that is generally given in the scriptures, one thing is, I live on the Ganges, or my house is on the Ganges. That is one example. The other example is red runs. Shono Dhavati. Now, my house is on the Ganges means what? Am I living in a boat or what? Or a floating house? So the idea is that if you take the literal meaning, it doesn't make sense. This will come in the next verses also. So I'm explaining to you now, because here also we have to see that. So if I take the direct meaning of the words, then it is not making sense unless I own a houseboat and then that houseboat is on that Ganges and then I'm... So the listener has to take the indirect meaning, saying, oh, what she means is her house is on the banks of the river Ganges. And now that makes complete sense. But when the sentence is uttered, my house is on the Ganges or I live on the Ganges, it doesn't make sense by itself. All right. Or Shono Dhavati, red runs. Red is a color. How can color run? But if the other person knows that I own a horse whose name is Red and that horse is the one that is running, then he will say, okay, oh, what she means is red horse runs. Or a horse named Red runs. So this is the second problem with Shabda Praman, is that word, one thing is it can have multiple meanings. And second thing is it has a direct meaning and an indirect meaning. Now here, if you take it is far and it is near, now the direct meaning far and near, immediately what comes to my mind is distance. Right? Directly what will come, if I say ashram is far from my home, then what impression in your mind is, oh, that means she has to travel a lot to go to that ashram. Or you guys, you know, your ashram. So you can say that is very far. Or somebody can say that is very near. So distance is what comes in our mind. But here we cannot take that distance. It's not like the supreme reality is far away somewhere and then for some it is not like that. What she means here is, it is far for those who do not recognize it. To give you a very simple example, which all parents will understand, my daughter lives in New York. Okay. So I can say, even though she's far, she's very near to me because I know her very well. She's very, very dear to my heart. I remember her every day. So even though far, she's very near to me. Right. Whereas my neighbor, whom I have not seen at all, he's my neighbor. We share one wall of the condo. I'm going to say being near, he's very far away from me. Because I don't recognize him. I don't know him. Okay. So here also, this far and near is not a distance thing. It is, do I believe in it? Do I know that there is something like a pure consciousness? And if I know, and if I believe, and if I'm trying to seek it, then I'm very close to it. But a person who does not know at all, who does not have faith, who does not believe, who does not, like we saw in that other mantra, Asurya Namate Loka, who has got that darkness of ignorance in his heart, in his mind, is very far away from him. Means it's going to take him many, many crores and crores of births to reach the supreme reality. Because he hasn't even started on the journey as yet. Okay, that is what she means here. Is that it is far for those who do not believe in it, who do not have faith in it, who do not want to know about it, or who are those, you know, fanatics. God is only in the temple and Shiva is my only God and he is the most superior. And, you know, Vaishnavites are saying Vishnu is superior and Ganeshji is superior and this one, Devi is superior. Those type of people, it's very far away from them because they are so caught up in this form that for them to understand the formless reality becomes extremely difficult. In Saddarshanam, Bhagavan Raman Maharshi was asked, somebody asked him, does God have a form or not? And Raman Maharshi asked him, do you think you have a form? He says, yeah. If the person says yes, then God has a form. If you think you don't have a form, then God does not have a form. So what happens is, when I think of a form is everything, when I'm identified with my body, obviously I'm identified with the form because body has a form. But even the mind doesn't have a form that way, right? It's homogeneous mass of thought. So supreme reality though is totally like space. Does space have a form? Space does not have a form. Okay, that's why it can accommodate everything. See, if the supreme reality had a form, if it was square, how round will fit in it? If it was round, how come a square will fit in it? That's why this supreme reality cannot have a form. That supreme reality is aham. Please understand this. It is aham, right? From the highest standpoint, it is me, myself. And this aham, I, even that I, does not have a form. And that is why this I becomes angry at one point, becomes happy at one point, becomes sad at one point. Do you get this idea? Because aham does not have a form, aham becomes fat at sometimes, identified with the body, at sometimes it is fat, then it loses weight, it becomes thin, aham becomes thin, aham becomes tall, aham becomes short, aham becomes bent, aham becomes happy, sad, very intelligent, dull. That's why, because aham does not have a form, it can take on any form that it is identifying with. Even simpler example is the white screen. We go for a movie, no matter what, it may be 70mm and IMAX and OmniMax and what have you. Have you ever seen a screen which is not white? You can't. Because only white can support all the colors. If it was a red screen, it cannot support the red color. If it's a green, it cannot support green. And therefore, the substratum has to be formless. And those who understand this, it is very near for them. That's why it says it is far for some, it is near for some. Those who can grasp this idea, it is very near for them. Those who cannot grasp this idea and they are caught up in form and they think that, you know, God is this form and temple and this and that, then it is very far for them. Okay, so this is how this taddure tadvantike should be understood. Then it is within all this and it is also outside all this. The example which Swami Vidyarani has given, very beautiful. So that will explain this. There is a pot which is full of water. Okay. And then that pot which is full of water is immersed in the ocean. So this is what this is. Inside the pot also there is water, and surrounding it is also there is water. And this is what the Supreme Consciousness, this is what is meant here, that it is within us. It is within all the upadhis. It is within not only just the living beings. It is within all the inert objects existing as the existence principle. That is why I experience the world as he is. The computer is, the glass is, the mouse is, the book is, the whatever stapler is, the calculator is. Every object in this world is experienced as is. Even nothingness is experienced as isness. There is nothing between this computer screen and me. Is nothing. So that isness, it is within and it is outside. We think that consciousness is within us, right? Because I'm living, I'm a living being. I think God. But actually what idea we should have, and in actuality what it is, this consciousness is within the body, but the body itself is in consciousness. Understand? It's like that pot has water within, but outside also, now that it is immersed in the ocean, outside also there is water. So that pot is our body. Within the body there is consciousness, but the body also is existing in consciousness. just like space. You will understand it better if we use the example of space. Within the body, there is space. Okay, right? There is space. That's why blood can move, circulate. That's why lungs can take air in and give. If there was no space in the lungs, how it can take the air in? So there is space, but the body, I'm sitting in space. There is space outside. That's why this body can sit here. That is what is meant here, that it is within all this. This is what? Idam, Purnam Idam. Remember? This, when Shruti says, she uses the word this, Idam, that is this entire world which is experienced. So it is within, it is, you know, like a cloth is there. See, the cloth has vertical threads and horizontal threads. You cannot make a cloth only with vertical threads or only with horizontal threads. It will tear, right? So it has vertical and horizontal. So the supreme reality is like that in the creation. It is in and through the creation. So it's vertical, horizontal, and diagonal also, if you want to add. This is what is meant. And that whole, everything is supported by consciousness. That's why when we say all pervading, if I say all pervading, see, a question came in one of my classes. They said, does the dead body have consciousness? And everybody said, no, it doesn't have consciousness. If you say that a dead body does not have consciousness, then the all-pervading nature of consciousness gets negated, because there is a dead body here. Consider this as a dead body, right? The book. So there is consciousness here, but there is no consciousness in the dead body. And then there is consciousness after the dead body. Shruti's statement is getting negated. So there is consciousness in the dead body, but there is no life, expression of life in a dead body. That is how it should be understood. Because the question, actually the question started off saying life and consciousness are one. That is not correct. Life is an expression of consciousness. This is extremely important. Please remember this. People think that, yeah, I'm alive and therefore there is consciousness with me. That's why Vedanta says, no, there is consciousness even in that inert object, in a stone, in dirt, in mud, in garbage, in filth. There is consciousness in the form of existence. And that is why a dead body also has consciousness. But it doesn't have the expression of life, because the mind, the subtle body, has now separated from it. Okay, so this is how this. Now, inside, how do we understand this supreme reality inside? Inside me, the supreme reality acts as the illuminator. I told you Devata, Dyotana Deva, in the previous mantra, Devata means that which illumines. Now, how do I understand it as the illuminator? It is my experience that when a thought passes my mind, I know it. Right? Can I say that this thought of happiness, I didn't know that I was happy. I never say that, right? Any thought that, anything that happens to my body, don't I know? If I remove my glasses, don't I know that my eyes now cannot see very clearly? Right? So there is some illuminating principle within us. As far as the eyes are concerned, we say it is the mind. Mind is telling me that the eyes cannot see without glasses. But who is illumining the mind? Because there could be a thought. There is a thought in the mind, whichever thought, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm jealous, I'm greedy, I'm hungry, I'm whatever thought, is not that thought being illumined as well? So mind is not the final illuminator, the Sakshi, as the question had come, what is Sakshi Chaitanya? So there is a Sakshi Chaitanya within us, which is the illuminator. All right. Now, Shruti is saying it is within us as well as it is outside. Outside, it is the substratum of this entire universe. Outside, it is not the illuminator, it is the substratum. What is to be understood is that the illuminator within me is the substratum outside. Okay, this is what is meant by tadu sarvasyasya bahyata. It is inside as well as it is outside. So remember the example of the pot with the water inside immersed in ocean, Or you can also remember that there is consciousness within me, but there is the body itself is in consciousness. This whole entire world is in consciousness. It is as if floating in consciousness. Okay? And then inside, it is the illuminator of my thoughts. It is the somebody can't hear very well, how do we know? We know, isn't it? I know I can't hear. I know I cannot see without glasses. I automatically know that. So there is some illuminator within us. And that illuminator is known as Sakshi Chaitanya, because it is the witness at that point. Illuminator, the word illuminator comes because there is something to illumine. Otherwise, illuminator has no meaning. Illuminator, that's why Sakshi, witness, word comes, because there is something to be witnessed. And what is being witnessed within me is my own thoughts, because nobody else can witness them. I know. Or my own eyes. How can anybody else, if I don't wear my glasses, can anybody else tell that you can't see? Even a blind person will have perfect eyes, beautiful eyes, but they can't see. But that person can know. So within, it is the illuminator. Outside, it is the substratum. The illuminator inside and the substratum outside are one and the same. That is what realization is all about. Okay, this is what Shruti is telling us. She's not talking about realization. She's telling us this is how it is. So we take it from there and then we understand it. Okay. Now. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmannevanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato naviju gupsate. He who constantly sees everywhere all existence in the self and the self in all beings and forms, thereafter shrinks not from anything. So this is the Phala Shruti. See, the first two mantras, the 4 and 5, explain the nature of the self, right? It is far, it is near, it moves not, it is inside, it is outside. All those terms were describing the pure consciousness. Now, this verse is talking of a person who has realized that. Not just intellectually understood, but realized it as his own experience. What is his vision at that point of time when he realizes it? This is what Shruti is explaining in this verse. So what she's saying is, he who constantly sees everywhere all existence in the self. So he sees here means not a physical seeing, but who has experienced that illuminator within to be the substratum outside. To explain it in the same words which I explained the previous mantra, the one who has recognized that this illuminator within, that itself is the substratum which is supporting the entire world, how will his attitude be? This is what Shruti is saying. I have come to which means what is the bottom line of that statement? The illuminator inside is the substratum outside. Means what? Inside, I am the illuminator. If that same illuminator is the substratum outside, it means what? Means I am only supporting the world. Right? If I come to know, like only verbally I know, intellectually I know, but suppose if I come to realize that the self within me is itself supporting the world. So how do we understand this a practical way? So let us take one object. Basically what Shruti is saying is that he comes to realize that the world is in me, because I told you, what is supporting the world mean? What does supporting mean? Without me, the world cannot exist, right? When we saw Matarishwa Dadhati, if H2O, if air is not there, where will water come from? Because air is hydrogen and oxygen. If those two molecules and one molecule of oxygen don't come together, where will water come from? That's why what we say, air is supporting water. Means what? Means without air, water cannot exist. Right? If you take hydrogen, if you take air, the air elements, hydrogen and oxygen away from water, what will remain? Nothing. So here also, what it means is that I myself am supporting this entire world. A very simple way of understanding this, and then we'll go into the technical details, is when I go to sleep, where is the world? Where is the world, right? Even see, Swami Swarupananji had told us this once before. He was in a lot of pain. He has got a physical disability and in his spine, whatever. And he used to be in a lot of, in his young days, he was in a lot of pain. And then he asked Gurudev, Gurudev, there is so much pain, you know, how do I deal with this? And Gurudev said to him, where is the pain in deep sleep? Where is the pain in deep sleep? So what it means is, as long as your mind is alert and awake to and identified with the body, you will feel the pain. The minute you remove that mind from the body, you will not feel the pain. Right? Is this, this is a simple form. Okay. Secondly, when I go to sleep, I may have a headache. I may have worries. Headache is physical. Suppose if I'm worried about something, you know, exams. Tomorrow I have to write exams and I'm worried. I haven't studied very much. But once I fall asleep, is that worry going to worry me? Is that thought going to bother me? Right? So the world gets shut down when the mind shuts down. What happens in deep sleep? The mind folds. What is deep sleep? Mind is folding. It'll come back again when you wake up. But for that time, it has folded. Once the mind folds, the world doesn't exist anymore for me. It is existing for other people. It's not like the world is getting destroyed. But for me, for that 1 hour or 2 hours or whatever that I'm sleeping, that world is destroyed for me. Which tells me that the mind is what is supporting the world outside. It's a very simple example, which I've given you before. I may be walking and then I'm in my own thoughts and somebody says hello to me or good morning to me. I don't see that person because my mind is not there. So that itself tells us that the mind is what is supporting this world. If the mind is awake and alert and conscious, you know, means very vigilant, then this world has all their effects on us. Okay. Now, technically, what is happening is, how do I get knowledge? The technical explanation of getting knowledge is, if you take an object, anything, you know, stapler, this stapler is here. So if I take this object, what actually is happening? And I'm only going to use eyes as an example, but you know that when I say eyes, it means all the other senses also. So because this has a form and a color, the stapler, so the eyes, the consciousness through the eyes goes out, wraps, as though wraps the object and comes back into my mind. See, any knowledge, huh? there is the knowledge that there is a stapler in front of me. The knowledge is happening only in the form of a thought. Is the stapler physically entering my mind? Physically, no object is entering the mind, yet that object knowledge is happening in my mind, right? I know that there is a stapler in front of me. I know that there is a book in front of me. I know there is a computer. So the phenomena of this knowing is what is happening is the consciousness which is within me. And that's why through the mind, the consciousness, through the eyes, if it is form and color, through the eyes, if it is sound, through the ears, if it is smell, through the nose, taste, through the tongue. Okay. So this way the consciousness goes out, wraps that object, and comes back into the mind, then that object form is there. But remember that the object is inert. It cannot illumine itself. What is the definition of inert? One that cannot illumine itself is inert. Why am I not inert? Because I know that I am sitting here on this chair and speaking. So I am illumining myself, and that's why I'm not inert, I'm alive. Why is the stapler inert? Because the stapler doesn't know whether I put it on the book or I throw it on the floor or throw it in the garbage. The stapler is not going to know. So that's why it is inert. So now, because this thing is inert, for the knowledge to happen, it requires some illumining principle, which is provided by the reflection of consciousness. The consciousness is reflecting in me. There is an illuminator within me. We have already determined that. So that illuminator, that Sakshi Chaitanya, is what is witnessing the stapler, and then knowledge is dawning on me that there is a stapler in front of me. See, I have broken this down, but these things happen extremely fast. And therefore, we don't even realize that this is what has happened. It just happens. There's a stapler, there's a computer, there's a cup, there's a water, there's mouse, there's this, there's that. It happens. Fast forward. You know, it's like going in fast. So this is how knowledge is happening. So instead of taking one object, now you take the entire world. Knowledge of this world is happening only in my mind. The substratum for this world is my mind. That's why when that substratum folds in deep sleep, there is no world. So now, who is supporting the world? My mind is supporting the world. My mind is supporting all the pain that I'm experiencing, whether it is a sorrow, it is happiness, joy, whatever it is there, and whatever is happening in the world, it is only my mind which supports the world. Now, intellectually we know this, but think about a person, a realized master who has actually experienced this. That this world, I am the substratum for this entire world. This entire world is nothing but me. Right? If I'm not there, if air is not there, water cannot exist. If mind is not there, world cannot exist. You get this? This is a very subtle point. Understand? Think about it. So this is what is meant here by he who constantly sees everywhere all existence in the self. And here the self, he has recognized not self as an object that is supporting the world, but that is me, the illuminator within me only is the substratum outside. Okay? So that oneness he has, that is liberation. That is what we call Jivan Mukti and Samadhi and all that. That is what it is. So he says this, and the self in all beings. So he knows that this is nothing but a play of consciousness, and that consciousness is me, myself. That is what is meant by, even in Bhagavad Gita also, Bhagavan in chapter 7 has said, actually there he says a little bit different. He says, they are in me, I am not in there, because this mantra is talking from the standpoint of a realized person. There he's talking from the standpoint of the pure consciousness. So there what he means is that it's like saying electricity saying computer is in me, I'm not in the computer, means I can exist without the computer, but computer cannot exist without electricity. That is what he means in Bhagavad Gita. But here it is the realized master who has now come to realize that this world cannot exist without me. Such a person, that means this world is nothing but me. Right? If it cannot exist without me, it is me only. Such a person, therefore he says, tatona vijugupsate. This jugutsa, this word, jugutsa means hatred, not liking, hatred it means. So therefore what happens is, if I come to know that this entire world is me only, will I hate anybody? This is from the jnana point of view, and Shruti has talked from the jnana point of view. If I talk from the bhakti standpoint, which might be easier, see, from bhakti standpoint is that I have an Ishta Devata, and I am suppose if I'm like of the caliber of Hanumanji or Mirabai or anything, when they looked at the world, they only saw either Sri Ram or Krishna. How they will hate anybody? Can you hate your Ishta Devata? It's your Ishta Devata. You have love. Now you look anywhere in the universe and you see only your Ishta Devata. How can there be hate? Here, this is knowledge. So in knowledge, they will not talk of Ishta Devata or anything, right? Because form is false. Knowledge-wise, form is false. So from knowledge point of view, it is the self. It is me, myself, that is supporting the world. I see myself. Or, you know, other way of understanding is, if I enter a hall of mirrors where there are many, many mirrors, now there are many reflections, am I going to say I don't like this reflection and I don't I know that it is my own reflection? Maybe the because of the mirror, I may feel, in some I look thin, in some I look fat, tall, short, whatever, ugly. I might look very ugly, in some I might look very, God knows if there is a mirror like that, which will make me look more ugly and more beautiful. But am I going to say that I like this reflection better than this reflection? Don't I know that it is me alone? And this is what the vision of that master will be. Then how can he have hate? So Shruti is saying here that those two are the previous two mantras, description of the pure consciousness, if it can be described. And then the master, the person who has recognized it, not just have an intellectual understanding or not just heard, but actually experienced that illuminator within as the substratum outside. Can he ever have any hate for anybody? This was Shruti's question. It's the question. Okay? Think about it. It's not that difficult to understand, but some might find it difficult. So we go on to the seventh verse, a mantra. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmeva bhudvijanatah tatra ko mohaka shokah ekatvamanu pashyatah. When to the knower, so this is an extension of the previous mantra. So when to the knower, and here knower means the realized master who has already been explained in the previous one. All beings have become one in his own Atman. How shall he feel deluded thereafter? What grief can there be to him who sees everywhere oneness? Ekam anupashyati. See, the last one, ekatvam anupashyatah. Anu prefix means following. Means following knowledge. Now he's seeing the oneness in all. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of the self. Knowledge that the illuminator within is the substratum outside. Okay? To explain this verse, let's take the example of dream, which is very, very common. So say I have a dream. I had a dream, and in that dream, I was there and I went for a movie and I sat in a movie theater and I watched a movie. So this is my dream. Okay. So I'm sitting and then on the screen, there is a nice, beautiful movie going on. And then I cry and I laugh and happy, everything. And then I see the whole movie in my dream. Now I wake up. I wake up from my dream. So when I wake up, now I'm thinking, oh, I saw the movie. Okay. I was there in the theater. Where was the theater? Who made that theater? I myself. It's my dream. No. Okay. Who are the hero and the heroine and all in that movie? Me only. There was me only. Who was the screen? There was me only. Right? When I wake up from the dream, I come to know that the one who was watching the movie itself, the actions in the movie, the theater, the seat, everything was me alone. Will I hate anything? Maybe while dreaming, you know, I see the villain and I hate the villain and I'm very fond of the hero. But once I wake up and I know that the hero was also me, heroine also was me, villain also was me, director also was me, producer also was me. Will I say that movie was horrible, I didn't like it? Are I only did it. Right? So now translate this into, so now in my ignorance, I'm seeing somebody as a hero, somebody as a villain, somebody as heroine, somebody director, not good movie, this. Now I wake up from this Dirgha Swapna, this act also Upanishad says is, now I wake up to that higher reality where I come to realize that who I was saying hero is only me only. But who I was saying heroine is me only. Villain whom I really hated is not me only. How I will hate anybody? How can I? Once I wake up, once I have that vision, therefore is a tatra komo kashoka. This tatra komo and kashoka will come in other Upanishads. It comes in all Upanishads. So what happens is, what event I found very sorrowful, but when I wake up, I come to know that there was nothing like that. It was a dream. How will I have delusion? Delusion comes because of identification with the body. We have seen that in the first chapter with Arjun. Bhagavad Gita, we said that Arjun, the reason he cried, the reason he had shoka was because he got deluded. What was the delusion? He thought he was the body. How do we know that he thought he was the body? Because he was the body, he said, that is my grandfather. That is my guru. That is my cousin. That is my friend. That is my brother-in-law, whatever. All that he saw because he himself considered himself to be a body. That was the delusion. And therefore, Bhagwan said that this delusion has to go because delusion is what is causing grief. Otherwise, they will never see if he had not identified with his own body. That is the original thing. He didn't. First, it doesn't come that this one is my grandfather and guru. First, what it comes is, I am Arjun, and I am the grandson of this man. I am the disciple of. So first, I am comes. And when that I am is placed incorrectly, that aham is placed incorrectly. So aham, Arjun, I am Arjun. What should have been there? Actually, in his case, either it should have been, I am a Kshatriya and I am a warrior and I am here to fight. And of course, from the highest standpoint, it should have been, I am that Satchitananda, but that Satchitananda gone, that he doesn't know only. He has even forgotten that he's a Kshatriya and he's a Pandava prince and he's supposed to fight the war. He has become son and grandson and brother and brother-in-law. And what was the result? We know he started crying. The valorous Arjun. Where are we? We are not even valorous to begin with. So if we are deluded, we'll be crying throughout life. No other way. So therefore, Shruti is saying that once that delusion goes, how can, again, she's asking a question. How can there be sorrow? If you are really identified with that Satchitananda, if you really honestly know you're not the body, whatever is happening to the body, Gurudev would say, you know, if you're walking on the road and somebody spits on your shadow, do you go shout at him, why you spat on my shadow? A truck goes on the shadow. This is Gurudev's example. A truck. Do you say, hey, what do you mean? You went on my shadow. So the realized masses is, somebody spat on my body, but I'm not the body. So what? I'm not, because I am firm in knowing that I'm not the shadow. My shadow is walking with me in the sun. Somebody comes and spits on that ground where that shadow was. I know very well it is not me. It is my shadow. So I would never say anything to him. If he spat on my clothes, I probably would, but not on the shadow. Or if a truck passes by, I'm not going to say, why you killed me? Why you killed my shadow? You ran over my shadow. So the realized master, he thinks of the body as a shadow. So no matter what happens to the body, there is no grief. There is no grief. There should not be any grief. For a realized master, definitely it is not. Therefore, he says, Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmai Vad Bhutbi Janata. He knows Janataha. So knows, not a deliberate superimposition, not a superimposition, but the firm knowledge that everybody in this world is me alone. Because why? Because I am the supporter of all the things and beings in this universe. Once I come to know this, there is no way that I can get deluded. And if I'm not deluded, grief cannot touch me. And this is the vision of the realized master. Okay. We shall stop here today. And then 8, we have to do on its own. 8 is a description of the Supreme Consciousness. And after 9, it will go fast. 9, 10, 11 and all we'll be doing together. So I'm going to stop here. And if there are any questions, we can take them next time. I just have an appointment right now. So if you don't mind. But I need to know if next week we can take the class on Tuesday evening. So please let me know. Monday evening, I cannot take class. I have to go and do some prayers at somebody's house. So please let me know. Okay, I would like to take class. I can take next Tuesday. If you are not free, if you guys are not free, then we'll have to take it the following Monday. So please discuss amongst themselves yourselves and let me know. But I definitely want to finish this text before we close. So if we don't take next week a class, then maybe we may have to take one in July or something. Okay? All right. So I'm going to close now and need to go. If there are any questions, either you can email me, you can email Ashok.